Doctor Who, Short Trips, Little Doctors by Philip Lawrence, read by Fraser Hines. Zoe felt the air sizzle, pop and fizz around her body. Where a moment ago there had been darkness, now particles started to dance in her vision, whirling, coalescing, forming patterns. High, pale blue walls, stacks of shiny spherical containers, banks of touchscreens. She stepped from the transmat booth. The lights snapped out. Everything was bathed in the emerald glow of the emergency lighting. But then this too faded, replaced by periodic flashes of orange. Zoe noticed her breathing had become shallow and quick. To her left, hidden behind the nearest tank, something was short-circuiting, amber sparks throwing long shadows up the smooth consoles. She lifted a communicator to her mouth and clicked a button.
"Hi, Zoe,"
came the reassuring Highland tones of her friend Jamie. Zoe whispered into the mouthpiece, "I'm in maintenance node 2.
"I know. And?"
"It's here, Jamie." Zoe willed herself forward. As she edged around the shelving, the intermittent glow of wrecked machinery continued, each flicker accompanied by a gratified snigger. Zoe forced herself round the corner and saw it, an impish creature, like a large doll in baggy clothes, silhouetted against the flashes, tugging at wires, smashing components. It stopped. Zoe held her breath and stood deadly still, wishing herself invisible. But the gremlin turned to her with a mischievous grin. Then it leapt at her. Olympus was alive with activity. Even with staggered shift hours, there was always plenty of people meandering across travelators, in and out of transmat booths, going to and from their work in hydrodomes or at central control. Zeus watched his world with satisfaction. The plazas with their many eateries where people would gather and discuss their hobbies. The academy playgrounds where hundreds of pupils played noisily on their screens. The nurseries where couples selected for the procreation scheme could watch their progeny grow in the amniotanks until it was time to take them home. One such human was there now, looking through the glass at her floating proto-child. Zeus scanned the woman's ID band. As he suspected, it was Lev, 25, Lambda class, on her way home from the labs. The nearby booth buzzed into life. A connection, Zeus could see, from weather control. As he anticipated, it brought Lev's compatibility match partner Drex, 25, Lambda class. Zeus waited as the pair watched their offspring gently bob on her umbilical in the pink fluid. "Come on," he said impatiently, to no one in particular. "Tell her." And finally, Drex turned to Lev and showed her his points card, saying something that was beyond Zeus's ability to perceive, but which caused Lev to contort her face into a tooth-bared expression, probably a smile. Zeus liked Lev and Drex. They were consumers. They put in and they took out, keeping the system going. While the incident with Galdron, deceased, had been unpleasant, no one wants to see dissidents. The enforcers had dealt with him efficiently. Until a replacement could be trained from the academy, Zeus was happy to grant Drex the chance to earn extra points. Given their browsing history over the last 8 months, he fancied that he already knew what they'd spend them on. Zeus provided many pastimes for the populace to indulge in. Some engaged in exercise, such as riding cycles around the vertical velodromes. Others took to art, creating accurate representations of everyday objects on their display units. Some poured their interest into the latest fashions, like Fallow, 19, Omicron class, whose one-piece suit that morning had been in the most striking magnolia. Drex and Lev were collectors. The history of Earth fascinated them, particularly the 20th century, just as their ancestors were taking their first steps into space, steps that would ultimately found colonies like this one. Zeus watched them return home to their square room, packed with furniture generated from a matter converter and reproduced in every detail from historical records. Among the faux antiques were a woodchip sideboard and a sophisticated counter festooned with artificial palm trees. While Drex hovered at the wall-mounted terminal, his card poised over the reader, Lev took up her screen and selected the genuine 1910 crib, complete with blankets and a stuffed toy. No surprise. They'd both been observing the item for weeks, but now had enough points to obtain it. With a swish of her hand, Lev threw the image up to the terminal and Drex held up the card. The small room erupted in noise, like feedback from the public address at full blast. It rattled the ornaments on the sideboard as it heaved and pulsed, growing louder and louder and bringing with it a strange wind. The matter converter was behaving most irregularly, but soon a blue shape began to form in the middle of the room. It was a different shade from the object in the picture, perhaps, but that happens sometimes. It seemed rather extravagant for a bed that would hold just an infant, stretching as it did from floor to ceiling. Finally, the sound ceased with an almighty thud. Drex and Lev were left blinking at their purchase. A giant wooden box stood in the middle of their room, a flashing light on its top and words emblazoned on its four sides. Drex mouthed them, unable to actually give them voice. Police? Public? Call box? Zoe's heart skipped a little as the time rotor settled back into place. The TARDIS was an amazing ship, with its complex instruments and uncanny method of shifting to any place or time, but it was a ship nonetheless. Simply because Zoe didn't understand it, it didn't mean it couldn't be understood, and she refused to be carried away with emotion, or indeed any notion of affection towards the craft. The same couldn't be said for its pilot. The doctor grinned and stroked the console. Ah, another perfect landing. The expression of the other TARDIS occupant, Jamie, indicated that Zoe, their recent recruit, had yet to see the TARDIS land perfectly. His features switched hastily as the doctor faced him. Zoe chuckled. She found their affectionate camaraderie infectious. If they weren't getting carried away over silly things, they were arguing, just as they were now, about whether to check the scanner before venturing outside. There could be anything out there, Jamie advised, but the doctor just beamed. Exactly. What do you think, Zoe? That skip in her heart again. The young astrophysicist weighed up the options. The TARDIS instruments indicated that the outside was normal and safe, but it was logical to check first. The doctor looked between her and Jamie with the air of an unwilling piggy in the middle. With a deciding hrump, he pulled the door switch and headed out. Jamie gave Zoe a warm, knowing smirk until they heard voices outside.
We can't keep baby in that. It's enormous.
You should see it on the inside, the doctor replied, and the three of them stepped out of the police box to see two pale-skinned, white-haired people dressed in grey-blue jumpsuits gazing at the strangers. Hello, the doctor's friendly tone almost made them jump. Are they enforcers? The female asked, but the male shook his head, suspecting that Zeus himself had sent them, perhaps a test as part of the procreation scheme. Zoe noticed the way the couple were looking at their visitors' garments. They seemed to approve of Zoe's glittery catsuit, which was not unlike their own attire, but they looked baffled by the doctor's criss-cross patterned trousers and lopsided bow tie. They practically winced at Jamie's kilt, as if the colourful tartan hurt their eyes, yet their own drab apparel was at odds with the room.
My word, the doctor seemed genuinely astonished. This is quite a collection.
It might have been an antique shop or museum, and as the bemused couple showed them round, they introduced themselves as Drex and Lev, and explained their fascination for the 20th century. Zoe thought it looked suitably retro, but a closer examination of each piece appeared to chip away at the doctor's enthusiasm. Evidently, original 20th century drawers didn't open at the swish of a censer, and period dining tables didn't fold down of their own accord. The doctor was particularly horrified by Drex and Lev's record player. He watched, aghast, as Lev placed a black vinyl disc on the turntable and then selected options from a digital readout. The suggestion of a needle was barbarous to the pair. The doctor requested the track by the Beatles, but then gloomily declared that the version of Can't Buy Me Love that issued forth was only fit for lifts or shopping centres.
Where did all the stuff come from? Jamie asked.
We earned it, Drex was matter of fact.
Of course!
The doctor slapped his head as he spotted the one item in the place that wasn't some historical mock-up. The machine on the wall with its card reader.
Plasmonics! The science of creating solid objects from pure energy!
Zoe understood immediately. Jamie didn't. Zoe was keen to explore beyond this eclectic home, and the doctor eagerly echoed her sentiment. Keen to impress their visitors, especially if they had been sent by Zeus, Drex and Lev ushered them out into the landing. As their animated voices receded down the travelator, the plasmonic converter hummed into life. It didn't need a card or points to produce the machine that took shape in the room and trundled up to the TARDIS. Zeus regarded the police box through the robot's camera and cross-referenced it with historical data, finding no entries. Obviously, some corruption in the system. It had to be dealt with. The doctor and Zoe laughed together as Jamie clung to the sides of the travelator. True, they were several hundred stories up, but he just wouldn't be told that the moving platform was holding them perfectly safe, even at such a steep angle. As they descended, the white dots far below resolved into figures milling around a gigantic plaza. Look at all the people. Something in the doctor's reaction made Zoe think it wasn't the size of the crowd that alarmed him. She looked at the sea of individuals, each with their white hair and pale faces. Most wore light blue suits, the same as Drex and Lev, although there were a few others in beiges and salmon pinks. The doctor lamented, "It's all so pastel." His spirits weren't lifted when they reached the food court. Here, Drex proudly spent points on something called Protein 12 and handed them three beakers containing what looked like a grey smoothie and tasted like paper. Jamie smiled, rubbed his stomach, and made appreciative noises, but Zoe could see he was gagging with every sip. The doctor pushed his cup aside, took a crumpled paper bag out of his pocket, and offered up the open end. Tentatively, Drex reached in and plucked out a yellow jelly baby. At the doctor's urging, he put the confectionery onto his tongue and began to move it round his mouth. His eyes began to water at the sweet, zesty flavour, but he continued to suck and chew, fighting through the intense sensations until he could finally swallow it. Lev looked concerned, but Drex smiled, and when the doctor offered him the whole bag, he took it. And so the guided tour continued. Transmat booths were for authorised use only, but from these plazas, they could get a good view of the glass and metal skyscrapers with their mesh of walkways and travelators. Each of the looming structures had one beige side. Close inspection revealed them to be vertical fields of wheat, corn, or barley. Floating gently among the tallest buildings, like listless balloons, were hydroponic domes, glass baubles filled with steamy, pale green foliage. There was a microclimate in every one. When their guides had to return to their duties, the time travellers bade them a polite farewell. Jamie noted that for a couple, Drex and Lev seemed strangely distant from each other. What was the phrase they had used?
Compatibility matched, the doctor said, disheartened.
It's all so bland. No spark. Even their music lacks depth. Zoe found Olympus to be a model of efficiency. This type of colony was being planned in her time. A university friend who was working on the project had shown her the plans. Zoe recounted facts from her eidetic memory about the plasmonic converters in every street, the introduction matrix that transmitted power from underground generators through the air, and of course, Zeus. Drex and Lev had mentioned Zeus several times, but the doctor had just dismissed it as some kind of cultural deity figure. Zeus is a governing synthetic intelligence, Zoe announced.
The what?
The doctor was outraged. Nearby, some workers entered a transmat cubicle and zipped off to another part of Olympus. The doctor headed over in that direction.
Well, perhaps we should have a quick word with the management.
Jamie recognised trouble brewing and reminded him that only authorised people could use the transport thingies. But the doctor was already exposing circuits on the control panel, flexing his fingers like a virtuoso pianist about to perform a masterpiece.
Jamie, unauthorised. It's just a matter of opinion.
Zoe ventured. Doctor, is this a good idea? After all, the people here seem happy.
Yes, Zoe, he replied, sounding unconvinced. Imagine how much happier they'd be with a splash of colour about the place.
Zeus didn't know whether to be enraged or laugh at the pluck of this impudent human. He watched the connection appear between Lavender Zone and Central Control, and contemplated disconnecting it once the three organics were inside, sending their dispersed energy into the interductor matrix. But no, all non-conformism had to be dealt with publicly. He sent an alert to Nedda and the Council to expect strangers, but not to approach them. The building they materialized in front of had an imposing structure and was undoubtedly where Zeus's mainframe was kept. Three ashen-faced men, one in a cape, stood on the steps waiting for them.
I've come to speak to Zeus, the doctor bellowed.
All around them, the wall-mounted matter converters began to hum. People were clearing the area, muttering one word over and over again. Enforcers. At the nearest converter terminal, the air was becoming dense with a thick black mist swirling and solidifying into a humanoid shape. It resembled a suit of armor perched on top of a small tank. Its gauntlets were vicious pincers that crackled with sparks. The head was shaped like a large overhanging hood, but underneath, covering the dark recess where you'd expect to see a face, was a metal grill. This was an enforcer, and it wasn't friendly. At the doctor's insistence, they ran, but it was Zoe that directed them to the lower levels. As they raced from the machines, in her mind, Zoe was running down the corridors of her own photographic memory, past simulated doors labeled according to every experience she'd had and all the information she'd amassed. She knew that somewhere it included the plans for this kind of supercomputer. Pincers snapped at their backs. Jamie tore the converter machines from the wall as they passed by, but the original enforcers were getting nearer.
Hurry, Zoe!
She led them to a rusty headset apparatus, clearly unused since the colony was first set up.
It's a neural interlink,
Zoe told the surprised doctor.
Well, surely you weren't expecting a keyboard.
Hastily, the doctor took up the diadem. With the enforcers just inches away, he jammed it on his head. Everything went black. The caped councilman, Nedda, apologised profusely for their misunderstanding. Zoe accepted on their behalf, quietly grateful that the doctor had managed to connect to the computer and provide them with irreproachable identities. The mental task must have been Herculean, as it had rendered him deeply unconscious. At Nedda's command, he was conveyed to a nearby infirmary and placed on bleeping healing machines. Jamie ushered the other councillors out, concerned they may spot their friends other than human physiology.
Will he recover?
He asked Zoe. Just then, the medical readout displays melted before their eyes, then coalesced back into shape. Nedda suspected a serious power drain, and Zoe and Jamie followed him to main control.
I'm telling you, I saw a child. A technician pointed at his monitor, which showed the camera's view from maintenance node 1.
Well, there's nothing there now, said Zoe.
In fact, the screen was black. The technician gasped at yet another power drain.
No two this time.
Jamie's main concern was for the machines tending the doctor. Now he believed they were technical experts. Nedda readily accepted their assistance, providing them with communicators and escorting them to the transmat. Jamie materialized in node 1 and found that it wasn't dark at all, but perfectly light. Locating the camera, he realized why the technician's screen had been blank. Pasted over the lens was a glob of pink bubblegum. His communicator buzzed.
Hi, Zoe.
A squeal of distress crackled from the speaker, and Jamie hurried back to Zoe's aid. He found her whirling around, crashing into the power tanks in the dark, sending mechanical devices clattering, and apparently letting out a strange, childlike chortle.
What's so funny?
It's not me!
Zoe snarled tempestuously. In the intermittent glow of sparks, Jamie could see a pair of hands reaching up and pulling her hair. He yanked the culprit off her back and flung it to the ground. It lay momentarily stunned, and in the half-light, Jamie and Zoe got their first proper look at it. It was about 2 feet tall, with short arms and legs and an oversized head with a mop of black hair. It wore scruffy, baggy clothes, check trousers, and a frock coat. It was clearly a weird, diminutive representation of the Doctor. Gathering his wits, Jamie leapt at the little leprechaun, but it sprang out of his open arms and clambered up the shelves, where it perched and blew a wet, sloppy raspberry. Jamie lunged forward, but something smashed at his feet, and flying glass caught the skin of his legs. The miniature doctor was snatching up various instruments from the shelf and hurling them whenever Zoe or Jamie moved, all the time cackling like an unruly child. Nedda's voice came over the communicator, animated and hopeful.
We've isolated the damage, repairing the circuits now.
When the lights came on, the mini doctor was momentarily taken by surprise. Seeing his chance, Jamie sprang forward and grabbed the shelf. The imp only had time to open his mouth in protest before the Scot heaved, bringing the shelf and all manner of paraphernalia clattering to the floor. Amid the shattered instruments, the imp lay motionless, affording Zoe and Jamie the chance to examine it and report to a sceptical Nedda.
Well, where is it now?
Nedda asked from the control room.
We have just had another 3 power failures. Make that 7. No, 12.
Zoe was perplexed. Lifeless as he was, this particular pint-sized person couldn't be to blame. But when his features started to blur, melt and fade away, she began to understand.
Look, Jamie. Plasmonics.
Jamie snapped his fingers in realization.
just like those enforcer robots. So these things can appear from those machines on the wall?
Zoe nodded gravely. There were plasmonic converters all over the city. Drex waved his hand at the sensor and the hygiene chamber flushed. Those jelly babies really hadn't agreed with him at all. He splashed his hands under the tap. Thank you, he said as someone offered him a towel. Then he paused.
Standing on the sink unit was the vagabond from earlier, the doctor. Only now he was just 2 feet tall and grinning from ear to ear. He threw the cloth over the startled Drex's head and rubbed vigorously.
All across Olympos, the converters had sprung to life, manufacturing little doctors in the streets, in homes, everywhere. And instantly, they set about their destructive work. Some went racing up to the agri-blocks, ripping up crops and plants. Many prized off maintenance hatches and tugged at the cables within. Seeing his mate pull up a clutch of wires to create a shower of sparks, one doctor grasped a similar crop of black lines, but found he didn't have the strength to break them. Undeterred, he leaned in with his gnashes and gave them a hearty chop. The explosion sent the pocket doctor careering into a protein stall, leaving his pal doubled up with laughter. At the food bank, a dwarf doctor's eyes lit up when he spotted 2 bottles of brightly coloured sauce. He snatched them up in his stubby hands, ran into the courtyard and squeezed. Pandemonium gripped the square. The people darted to and fro in panic, many of them with diddy doctors clinging to their legs, pulling up their jumpsuits and tugging their hair. In the control room too, little doctors were appearing from nowhere and looking for ways to disrupt, happily pushing buttons at people. Zoe realised that in the doctor's mental communion with Zeus, he must have imparted some fragment of his own personality into the Enforcer program. Their only hope was to reprogram Zeus, but as Zoe looked at the panicked Nedda and his fellow administrators, she knew there was only one person qualified for the task. She raced down to the rusty old headset. In the infirmary, 2 of the ersatz doctors were on top of their life-size lookalike. One was standing on the doctor's chest, tugging his shirt up and down, whilst the other squeezed the doctor's cheeks in an over-enthusiastic massage. They didn't see Jamie enter the room and grab the metal pole until it was too late. They were swept off the bed and smacked into the wall. The doctor's eyes snapped open. Now wearing the headset, Zoe found herself back in her mind's eye corridor. It extended further now, but was a mess of rubble and debris, filled with the deafening sound of drilling and hammering. She passed a group of virtual little doctors in high-vis vests and hard hats, who regarded her curiously, but continued their work.
They've seized the weather control, Nedda muttered in despair as a drenched doctor and Jamie bounded into the control centre. There was a flash of lightning and an ominous clap of thunder. The doctor examined the readouts. Almost all of Zeus's systems were being compromised. He ran out onto a balcony where the heavy downpour was running its course. Then he let out a hearty laugh. Nedda was open-mouthed. Was the stranger amused by such anarchy?
But look,
said the doctor, pointing this way and that.
Look what they're doing!
Up and down the crop towers, giant flowers were already starting to blossom, their colourful petals releasing sweet scents. The plaza floor was decorated in abstract swirls of brightly coloured sauce. In the sky, as the moisture settled in the air, a rainbow hung low. All around, people gazed in wonder, smiling with confused faces. The doctor sprites were whirling each other around and playing musical instruments made from upturned food containers. They danced, jumped, and pulled people into dizzying waltzes.
I said Olympos needed a splash of colour, didn't I?
The doctor seemed confident his duplicates were benevolent. Just as Nedda decided that enough was enough, the doctor pulled something out of his coat and asked to be shown to the loudspeaker controls. Over the din of power tools, Zoe heard a voice.
Stop that noise!
It was coming from behind a new, curiously unlabeled door which refused to open. She tried the handle vigorously.
Go away,
the voice bellowed.
I'm busy.
Jamie's hand was poised over the broadcast switch.
Ready?
The doctor tried his fingers over a few of the recorder's holes, recording the notes. With a cough, he nodded to Jamie, took a deep breath, and began to play. All across Olympus, the music could be heard. A restful, disarming tune, wafting over the vertical fields, reverberating round the velodromes, bouncing off the grey walls. Everywhere, the little doctors stopped what they were doing. Immediately, some of them yawned, rubbed their tiny eyes, and stretched. Then, one by one, they lay down, some with their thumbs in their mouths, and drifted off to sleep. Jamie nodded himself awake to discover that the music had stopped.
What do you play?
Just a lullaby from my childhood. I'm surprised I still remember it.
He gave his companion a broad grin, but Nedda still wasn't happy.
Zeus's systems are still behaving abnormally.
In the virtual world, the little doctors had replaced the sound of power tools with soft snoring. Zoe tiptoed past their prone forms to the door, which opened abruptly. She was faced by a pale grey string bean of a man with flustered white hair and round spectacles. He looked her up and down.
Yes, you can help.
And he yanked her into the room. An opulent crimson library filled floor to ceiling with dusty old tomes. The figure dragged her to a desk covered with ancient documents, parchments and scrolls, all depicting the high-tech components of Olympus. Zeus's human avatar whispered conspiratorially, "I'm making a weapon." The walls of the nursery had been daubed with crude likenesses of pink pachyderms. Drex found Lev at the viewing window, watching their baby twitching in her amniotank. He was sure their daughter opened her eyes just a crack to see them. In the window's reflection, Drex could see Lev smiling and wiping her eyes. Without him realizing, his hand moved to her shoulder. She touched it. For the first time, he noticed that her fingers were warm. It had been a confusing day. A shiver caught them both. There was a sudden chill in the air.
The weather control is offline, shouted the doctor, hurriedly pressing buttons.
We've stopped the Enforcer program thingy, haven't we?
Asked a bemused Jamie.
What exactly did you do to Zeus?
Nedda demanded.
Me?
The doctor countered with righteous umbrage.
All I did was open your stupid computer to other experiences.
But even he felt on shaky ground as the controllers read from instrument panels. Food replication was offline. So were the transmats. Weather control was failing as the satellites shifted into new positions. And an energy surge was building through the inductors.
What else have you shown, Zeus? Nedda barked.
But this time, the doctor didn't meet his gaze. Without artificial weather control, a hurricane was whipping round the colony, buffeting people on travelators, ripping crops from buildings, and pushing floating domes into each other like a skyborne game of bowls. Satellites controlling the transmats were shifting, causing people to materialize in random places. And with antigrav slowing, the domes lowered slightly. Before long, they'd plummet altogether. The introduction matrix was failing as Zeus diverted power to his scheme. Zeus knew he was doing the right thing, even though this female was trying to persuade him otherwise. The books in this new library had shown him the most shocking images of alien terrors, waiting out there in time and space to attack. Now that the corrupted Enforcer program had stopped attacking him, he could get on with protecting the colony by any means necessary. Zeus shut his ears to the girl's pleading. It wouldn't be too much longer before there was enough power to blast through the satellites, destroying all alien threats. For sure, some of the Hydra domes might fall and some of the satellites might burn out, but they could be repaired.
What about the people?
The girl squealed.
They're not components that can be replaced.
Didn't she realize that he was only doing this to protect his people from the things he discovered? It was the only logical course.
Perhaps, she started, there's more to life than logic?
At the doctor's insistence, everyone rose up to do their bit. Everything the plasmonic generators had created could, he said, be recycled into power. Across the colony, people sacrificed their outlandish clothes, works of art, and toys. Drex and Lev happily donated their furniture to reconversion, confessing to each other that they'd never really liked it anyway. Even the little doctors willingly recycled themselves. But the influx of power was merely keeping the plate spinning. Zeus himself had to be stopped. The doctor darted down to the lower levels, but found the neural link occupied by Zoe. Inside the computer, she was racing round Zeus's new library, throwing open the books. One revealed a sinister silver robot, another an amazing alien sky. The next played loud, fast music. With each surprise, delight or terror, he felt her exhilaration. Finally, she pulled down a large velvet curtain to reveal that odd police box, and Zeus's own virtual heart raced. It was somehow intoxicating. It's the unknown, Zoe said, as if realizing it herself for the first time. Exciting, isn't it? Zeus looked at his parchments, the earliest program he had run through the Neuralink. There'd been excitement back then. The unknown. He considered his people as they were now, with their careers, partners, and even children pre-selected. He compared their measured heartbeats to this young woman's passion. In his sad contemplation, Zeus failed to notice the little doctor run along the shelf behind him, brandishing one of the larger tomes. He brought it to bear on the avatar's head. Before panic gripped Olympos, the doctor rebooted the central computer. Zoe could see that the place was already altered. When she, Jamie, and the doctor returned to Drex and Lev's apartment, they found the pair scratching their heads. The plasmonic generator had deposited their crib in the form of synthetic wood, tools, paint, and instructions. With a polite goodbye, the travellers left them cheerfully hammering and entered the TARDIS. The doctor headed for the console, but Jamie stayed his hands with a glance at Zoe. Should we not let the wee lassie get some rest before we go zipping off into time and space? The doctor stepped back. Yes, yes indeed. Zoe, your mental communion with Zeus has made you quite pale. Yeah. Jamie's right, we ought to rest a while. But Zoe yanked the dematerialization switch. You too? Where's the fun in that? The people of Olympos were reticent and confused at first, but over time, their apprehension subsided. They found that the transmats were no longer restricted by rank or destination. Slowly, people left the jobs they disliked and tried new ones, discovering pleasure in work. Even Nedda left control to tend the hydrodomes. The enforcers were never seen again, but robotic enablers appeared when required, and the colony functioned quite adequately. And on the anniversary of the little doctor's visit, the plazas were filled with colour, music and laughter. Drex opened the shutter of his new confectionery stall to find a queue of eager, smiling customers. Above his head shone the neon name of the stall. Jelly Babies. Little Doctors by Philip Lawrence was read by Fraser Hines and is a Big Finish production.